Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I am announcing today that I will be retiring from the Senate by the end of the year.
Goodbye, Trent. Have a nice life. To cynics about politics, the story of Trent Lott's resignation from the Senate might be quite simple. Trent Lott is cashing in on his political chips now so that he can take advantage of expiring campaign finance rules pertaining to lobbyists. You see, these rules are set to change in the new year. Then there's Darren Dopp. You know that name? He resigned as one of Governor Spitzer's closest aides recently because of the Troopergate scandal. And where did he go? Right to a consulting job for a big Albany lobbying firm. Who cares? Well, let's take a spin on the revolving door between politics and lobbying firms and find out why maybe we just should. Sarah Dufendach is Vice President for Legislative Affairs at Common Cause, which is the Campaign Finance Reform Advocacy Group, and Dick Dady is Executive Director of the Citizens Union, the New York City-based good government group. Dick, welcome back. Sarah, welcome to WNYC. Good morning.
Good morning,
Thank
Brian.
Thank you so much.
Sarah, I'll start with you. In the 24 hours now since Lott made his announcement, this idea that it has something to do with the change in campaign finance rules has caught on. He's certainly not saying that. But tell us where those rules stand today in 2007 and how they will change in the new year.
Well, actually, most people have been talking about the revolving door, meaning that if Senator Lott leaves office today, he only has to wait 1 year before he can lobby his former colleagues. January 1st, 2008, when these rules take effect, he will have to wait 2 years to lobby his colleagues. But the other thing that people aren't really paying attention to is the other change in the rules is that in 2008, any senator has to disclose within 3 days of any negotiations they're engaged in for future employment before their successor is elected. And they can't seek employment as a registered lobbyist while they're still in the Senate. That actually is a really a big change in the rules. In other words, if he waits till 2008, he can't even negotiate as a lobbyist while he's still in the Senate. He would have to wait until he left. So by leaving now, he would, if he wants to be a lobbyist, he's free to negotiate as a lobbyist job, and he would only have to wait 1 year to lobby his colleagues. Now, nobody knows what's in his mind. He's mm-hmm. had 35 years of service in the Congress, and, you know, you can certainly understand if he was fed up with it. But a sudden and immediate departure like this does kind of make you scratch your head
after
and wonder what's going on.
Yeah, after he just ran and won re-election last year for another six-year term.
Exactly. This isn't like he's at the end of his term. He's at the
right.
beginning of his term.
And, you know, what I think, this seems plausible that he's leaving for the reasons that we have speculated here, but I think that there might be even a more hidden story that has yet to come to light and may come to light soon. I think that there may have been some problems with his performance and his relationships in office. So I don't think we know the full reason yet. Because
what are you speculating?
Well,
I
don't think that he, you know, I mean, not only did he
what performance, what relationships?
Well, it is being reported on in some of the Washington D.C. blogs that he may, revelations may soon come out about improper sexual trysts with a gay male escort.
Trent Lott may have a Larry Craig problem.
Exactly. Now, these are rumors and innuendos, but they're making the rounds and are starting to be reported by some of the press.
Okay, but let's be clear. Rumors and innuendos,
exactly.
Not substantiated.
Not substantiated, but, you know, for him to have, I mean, not only was he reelected, but he actively sought the number two position in the Republican Senate as the whip. This man has had a long career in government. He loves being in the political sphere. For him to make this abrupt decision leads me to suspect that there's something more to it than what we know.
Whip. Interesting. No, I'm just kidding. Getting back, Sarah, to the lobbying rules, give me the genesis of this. What happens now? How common is it for members of Congress to leave office and wind up lobbying the Congress? And with what effects on policy or the fundamentals of our democracy?
Yeah, you know, it's prevalent, but not everybody who leaves becomes a lobbyist, but many do. And
it's hitting Fred Thompson on the campaign trail. You know, his opponents say, look, after you left the Senate, you became a lobbyist. So they're saying you're a Washington lobbyist. People can't trust you. So there's an example of how somebody who's had the bulk of his career doing other things, acting, being a politician, when he left the Senate, it was probably out there. It was probably low-hanging fruit for him to make a bunch of money by being a lobbyist for a while.
Well, I think what it does is it kind of makes, if somebody has a long career in public service and then immediately goes, becomes a lobbyist and cashes in on, you know, enormous amounts of money, it does make you a little bit suspect of what was their motive, especially in the last years of their service. What were they doing, or were they doing anything to ensure that they would have a lucrative future? But I think the one thing that we have seen happen is, you know, it happened in the House, was that you've got chairmen of committees who are negotiating for lobbying positions in a couple of months after they leave, with companies who have business before their committee at the time they're negotiating the terms of their future employment.
Right. That's really a conflict of interest. And that's what you were talking about before with this other change in the rules as to when Lott or anybody else could negotiate their new positions,
exactly,
correct?
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, I certainly know, I'm not saying anything, but it is also interesting that Mr. Hastert decided that he was going to end his career in Congress on Monday. We all knew he was going to retire, but it was like Monday.
Right.
Again, if he's negotiating with to be a lobbyist, he can do that now. He can't do that in 2008 while he's still in Congress.
Now, there is this Albany example, too. Dick, I mentioned it in the introduction. Former aide to Elliot Spitzer, Darren Dopp, is former communications director, one of Spitzer's very closest aides, resigned from his government job in connection with the Troopergate scandal. He's now under a perjury investigation. But before the investigation was revealed, he took this job as a consultant to a lobbying firm, as I understand it. What exactly did Darren Dopp go to do?
Sure. I mean, he joined a government affairs firm that does both lobbying and public relations. And the new state ethics law, as part of the public officers law, prohibits any executive chamber state agency employee from lobbying their state agency or the executive chamber for 2 years after their departure. So while Darren Dopp has joined a lobbying firm or a government affairs firm, he has done so as a strategist and as a communications consultant, and he will not be lobbying in that he will be contacting directly people in the executive branch of government, but he will be advising.
But he's still being paid by that company.
He's still being paid.
So it seems to me that this is a loophole the size of a New York State Police helicopter.
It is a loophole. I mean, he's not going to have any direct contact, but he'll be advising people on how to contact the very people that they're trying to influence.
And with what effect, do you think, potentially, on New York State policy?
Well, you know, he'll have an inside knowledge in a way that'll be very helpful to the government affairs firm. But in an interesting twist, Brian, the state Senate Republicans have chosen not to do any business with this lobbying firm now as a result of its decision to hire Darren, given Darren's involvement with the Troopergate scandal.
So your connections can help you and your connections can hurt you depending on the politics of the moment.
Exactly.
And we have some people calling in. We'll take a couple of phone calls on this. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 for Dick Dady from the Citizens Union and Sarah Dufendack from Common Cause. Sarah, can you think of any particularly egregious examples that Common Cause has documented over the years where people did leave Congress, went to lobbying firms, and maybe have had undue influence in ways that are not in the public interest?
Well, it's kind of hard to know individual cases like that, but I think the one case that I referred to before where the member of Congress was negotiating with the pharmaceutical trade group while a huge health care bill was in his committee.
Who was that?
Billy Towson.
Oh, Billy Towson. I knew it was somebody from Louisiana.
Yeah.
Good old Louisiana.
A multi-million dollar contract with pharma at the same time that the Medicare bill was in his committee. That's where the damage is done right there. It's done before they even get out.
Good old Louisiana, the good government capital of the United States.
Right, right.
Because it makes them more appealing to their lobbying firm if they are able to do things in office prior to being hired.
Doug?
Yeah. I mean, that's where they have the power. And that's why I actually think the reform of requiring them to disclose who they're negotiating with and prohibiting them from negotiating to be a lobbyist while in office, and this is for both the House and the Senate, is actually a more important reform even than the adding a year onto the revolving door.
I didn't watch the whole lot news conference yesterday. Do you have any idea whether anybody asked him if he is presently negotiating with any such firm?
I don't know.
You know, it's interesting. We do not have that reform on the state level, but it's, I think, something that would be very good to have.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was one of the best things that that came out of the lobby reform legislation on the national level.
We have this two-year prohibition from having on any contact after you leave public service, but there's nothing prescribing before you leave in the kind of engagements or decisions you make.
Right.
And here's a comment posted on our comments page at WNYC.org. Someone says, even funnier, if Lott leaves before year end, Mississippi governor must declare a special election within 90 days as opposed to Governor Barbour's announced plan to appoint an interim for the next year and schedule the special election to coordinate with the national. The latter plan would both give the Republican interim more time to gain popular support, plus give the Republican interim the tailwinds of greater voter turnout in a Republican state for a presidential election year. Tsk, 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 that low is a persnickety thing. In other words, this writer is saying that Lott is even hurting his party in the general election by leaving this quickly rather than leaving after the first of the year when it would be, you know, when they could schedule a special election with more impact.
Sounds like that's true.
So let's take a couple of phone calls. We don't have much time. Doug in South Orange, you're on WNYC. Hi, Doug.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment that, I mean, I consider myself pretty politically with it, but I was completely blown away to learn that these men and women are negotiating for jobs while they're in office. At the same time, I guess I was equally relieved to find out that they've actually done something about that.
Right. Yeah. You know, amazingly, the lobby reform bill that was passed, both the House and the Senate, has some really good reforms in it, this being one of them.
All right, Doug, thank you. By the way, Trent Lott voted against that ethics reform bill, as I understand it. Is that, can you confirm that? Jamie and Vernon, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jamie.
Hello, Brian. My comment is not just the lobbyists, but the committee chairmen direct the monies and everything towards people that benefit them, like Dianne Feinstein from California. Her husband is, I understand, is in military supplies, and she made, you know, directed things that he benefited from. So she's benefiting from her own thing, not just, you know, instead of the lobbyists.
You're talking about trying to get pork for your district, or you're talking about campaign finance donations?
Right, and she's getting it. Her family is benefiting from this.
Yes. Jamie, thank you. Sarah?
Yeah, one of the reforms that is in this bill that passed was an earmark reform. That means before the reform, members of Congress could earmark certain amounts of money, sometimes millions and millions and millions of dollars, to go to specific projects, and then we're finding out that sometimes their family members would benefit or large contributors would benefit, and no one even knew this was happening. Now, if a member of the House or the Senate puts into a bill specific amounts of money for specific projects, they have to identify themselves with that. They have to say, you know, Dianne Feinstein or, you know, Senator X, mm-hmm, with this earmark. And then it's disclosed. People know it. And then we can go back and find out, okay, you know, so-and-so is on this payroll, this, you know, this advantage is one big contributor. And again, it just contributes to the sunlight of government so that regular people like, you know, Jamie and Vernon and you and me can know what's going on.
So in our last minute, why isn't there more outrage about these things? I mean, Dick, you know, for every little tiny nuanced detail that's being picked apart about Troopergate, to me it's a huge thing that in the middle of it, Darren Dopp walked out and is starting to get paid by a lobbying firm. But, you know, I don't see any editorials about this.
Well, I think because, I mean, there have been a few editorials. There hasn't been the drumbeat that one would hope to see happen. But I think that, you know, the general public just sees this as politics as usual, that this is, you know, what politicians do. They enrich themselves while in office.
But maybe that's why half the people in America don't vote, Sarah.
Right.
I mean, this is going to be a billion-dollar presidential campaign, right?
By
many estimates, $1 billion. And you know where all that money is coming from, largely from big special interests who have their hooks into government. And, you know, and whether it's the candidate who takes the most money or it's the candidate who takes the third most money, the structure is still basically the same. But I think this is still just kind of an abstraction to most of the American public.
Right. Exactly.
Sarah, last word.
Yeah. Can I just put a plug in?
Yep.
Public financing. If we had public financing, we wouldn't have all of this big, huge money going into all of these campaigns and then people feeling beholden to people who put them there, which is not the public. The public needs to finance these campaigns so that lawmakers are beholden to the public and it's public service.
Sarah Dufendach, Vice President for Legislative Affairs at Common Cause, Dick Dady, Executive Director of the Citizens Union here in New York. Thanks both.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, Steve Clemens, who writes the Washington Note, that blog. He's got some reasons why the Annapolis Summit just might work.